tonight, like sometimes I really spend a lot of time, well, I may spend an hour or more in the afternoon on Tuesdays over some questions that I want to address, sometimes more. I mean, thinking about anxiety attacks, that's really something that probably I've thought about more than once over the years and probably put quite a bit of energy into, and we looked at that twice just recently. But once in a while I grab some and I don't give huge amounts of thought to them. I have some ideas, but it's more so I think, okay, this is a good question just to kind of throw. Sometimes maybe in these studies you do a lot of listening. Sometimes there's more interaction. But once in a while I just want to, I want to throw a question at you and try to get a sense for your approach to questions like this, how you think, what would go through your mind. What if you were in a place where somebody was confronting you with this kind of question? And like oftentimes, I go into my APT file and I grab the one off the top. The reason I grabbed this one right off the top is because I remembered it and I thought, yeah, that's a good one. That's one I want to deal with. The reason I want to deal with this is because we've been confronted by this various times over the years. And when our church was very young and we met over on Hackberry, we actually had some people that were coming to the church that were somewhat of this mindset. And through the years, we've had to kind of deal with this. Anyway, I want to throw this question out to all of you and just get you all thinking. So let's just look at it. The subject line says this: is it a sin to not minister at an abortion clinic? I was recently told this. In other words, they were recently told that it was a sin if a Christian does not do this. Is it a sin to not minister at an abortion clinic? I was recently told this. The person used verses such as the Great Commission and verses on loving your neighbor / the least of these. And although I agree that it's a noble and very needed ministry, I have a hard time saying it is sin to not be at the Planned Parenthood's abortion clinics, at Planned Parenthood's and abortion clinics directly. There are many people near and dear to me who have protested churches, signs and all, for not protesting at abortion clinics. So you got people protesting churches. Instead of standing out in front of the abortion clinics protesting, they're actually standing out in front of churches and they're protesting the churches because they're not out in front of the abortion clinics protesting. I have felt the pressure that I need to be there, but not as a calling. Rather, the pressure that if I'm not there, I may be in sin or looked down on by people who are very close to me. I know I struggle with people-pleasing, and I don't want to jump into a ministry simply to please the people around me. So here's the question. You know, oftentimes it can be very helpful in approaching any situation, any question, to try to put yourself on the other side. In other words, never to create a straw man. Straw man is basically when you set the argument up in such a way that it's very easy for you to win the argument. You often find that when you're actually bringing a person of the other position into the argument goes a little bit different than if they're not there. If you're simply presenting the case and you're representing people on the other side of the argument, it tends to go quite a bit different if you actually have somebody on the other side of the argument. Because oftentimes they have thought through their case for something, and they have reasons and they have arguments sometimes that that there can be a measure of persuasion there. Just let me ask you this. Let's say you were in a debate class, and you know, if you took debate in high school — my high school didn't have it, but you know, I know some do — if you were in a debate class in high school or in college, oftentimes when you're in a debate class, you are given a subject matter to debate whether you agree with it or not. So what is happening is you're being put in a place. In fact, it would probably be a bit of an exercise for somebody if the professor of the class or the teacher of the class knew people held a certain position and gave them the opposite position to defend in the debate. That can be very helpful because it makes you think through where the other people are coming from, rather than just to reject something and put up all your shields. You actually now have to go over on the other side and you have to really think, okay, so my job is not so much to ask myself what my conviction is on this. My assignment has been to defend this point of view. So now what you want to do is you want to think, what are all the best possible ways that we can defend this? And so let's start out not by saying, okay, I'm going to throw it in your lap to go to Scripture to help this guy and maybe refute these people who are coming after him like this, aside from any people-pleasing problems on his side. Let me be the college professor and let this be the debate class, and you guys are all the students, and I'm throwing it in your lap to debate this thing and put yourself in the place of the ones who believe it's sin to not be involved in protesting abortion clinics. And of course, here's the thing. My appeal to you is not to convince me as a man or as a citizen of the United States. Convince me as a Christian. Which means you're going to have to bring forth biblical arguments, because I'm not going to buy your secular arguments. Bring forth biblical arguments and show me the best possible arguments that you could show me as to why Christians, one, just ought to be involved in abortion at all, aside from whether it really means that we ought to be out front with our signs and protesting in any certain manner. Just make a case that as Christians, we have a responsibility to be involved in this. Let's really try to think and bring forth our best possible biblical arguments. What does James 4:17 say? For those that know to do good. Now prove to me that this is actually good, though. Here's the thing. Prove to me that, you've convinced me that we as Christians should do good. But here's the thing. Out of all the good that we can do, prove to me that's one of the good things that I should be doing. Now, you could just say, hey, good covers all good, and if it's good, it falls into that category. I would buy that.
The Word of God says in Exodus 20:13, you shall not murder.
You shall not murder. Okay, now if I say, but I'm not murdering, and the truth is people in our church are not murdering. I mean, we're trying to keep that law. People out there in the world, they use God's name in vain, and they're desecrating His glory all the time, and they're stealing and they're raping and they're killing and they're committing immorality of all sorts. We can't really stop the world from doing all the wickedness that they're doing. Our responsibility is to live holy in the sight of this, which really a perverse generation. We're to be lights in the midst of this perverse generation. But am I really supposed to go and try to tie their hands and chain their feet from doing evil? Is that my calling?
I would say in Titus 3:14 it says, "And let our people also learn to maintain good works, to meet urgent needs, that they may not be unfruitful." And I'd argue this is one of the most urgent needs our country's facing is this abortion crisis. So
I agree. I was driving to go pray yesterday morning, and I turned on AM talk radio, and some guy, supposedly conservative, calls in about, you know, this potential pick for the Supreme Court. And the guy said, he said, abortion isn't even the big issue. Gun rights and all that. And I thought, what is he talking about? We're murdering our children in this country. Are you going to tell me these other things trump that? But you're right, an urgent need. Are there urgent needs around us when it comes to children being murdered?
Isaiah 1:17,
yeah.
It says, "Learn to do good, seek justice, reprove the ruthless, defend the orphan."
Defend the orphan. And of course, visiting the widow and the orphan in their affliction. Now, here's the thing. Piper has made the argument. Which is more to be defended, a child with no parent or a child with a parent that wants to kill it? Mm-hmm. Which is truly the more needy? So we are to visit the widow and the orphan in their affliction. Any other arguments? Yep.
Proverbs 31:9 says, "Open your mouth, judge righteously, and defend the rights of the afflicted and needy."
Okay, now here's a question that I would ask you. The person who wants to condemn the Christian, because they're not actively involved in protesting at abortion clinics, can you, by these verses, does it naturally fall out that we should be condemning people who won't do that? See, that would be the big question in this. Is, because what's on the table here is, here's a guy that is having friends approach him. They're putting peer pressure on him. They're making him think that if he's not actively involved, that he's in sin. So I would ask this. Let's ask another question. Let's just think through all the possible ways that we can actively be involved in seeking to do something for these children. Because let's be honest, the person that goes down and holds up the sign out in front of Planned Parenthood, I've been there, and I've watched videos of people that do it. And you know what? Some people are very compassionate in doing it, and some of the professing Christians probably rile people up. and only antagonize people and don't save a single child. In fact, if Christians poured out an immense amount of energy, and in the course of a year, one child was prevented from being murdered, and that's all they gave themselves to, is that church being faithful to what it's called to do? What are all the ways, what are all the possible ways that we can actually enter into this?
Politics
is one way. We can vote. Listen, I voted for Trump. And one of the primary things that I was hoping for was that he would put conservative justices. Because I think we all know that the fast track to at least the laws of our land, to just the demoralizing of the laws of this country, is happening through our judges in this land. Judges who were mainly supposed to be interpreting laws are now making laws. We have rogue judges all over this country, and basically they're doing what seems right in their own eyes. And, you know, the truth is that if Trump puts younger conservative justices, oh, I would love to see abortion become a state's rights issue, because Texas would ban it. Most of the South would ban it. We would eliminate many. So if you don't vote when you have an opportunity to vote, to let your vote be heard in these things, I personally feel like, look, if it's a matter of going to the polling station and you can vote, I'll tell you, abortion probably guides my vote as much as anything. What else can we do?
Pray.
See, prayer, we don't never want to underestimate that. I mean, I'm not putting my confidence in the next Supreme Court justice. I'm just asking the Lord, please, Lord, cause this to stop. Cause men and women with reason to be in our government. Stop this. Don't underestimate prayer. If God's people, brethren, I'm afraid we don't pray for our leaders like the Bible says we should. And I'm only saying that because if you ask who's guilty, I would raise my hand first. Honestly, I pray for all manner of things all the time. But if you ask me how often, I'll be honest. I prayed for Obama, but it was hard for me to pray. And I'm not a huge fan of Trump's moral life. I find myself probably more disposed to pray, but I don't pray for our governing officials. I understand that San Antonio has one of the most far-left city governments in the country. If I was going to be honest, and this is sin on my part, I believe. But I don't believe I've ever prayed for our mayor one time. I don't even know who he is. And he's supposed to be extremely liberal. I can't just chalk it up to, well, since he's liberal, he's just going to do liberal things and there's no sense praying. Scripture tells me to pray. I don't pray for our governing officials. I'm praying because I'm out of tune. I guess that's one of the things. I don't watch the news. I don't stay really connected to our politics. I just don't. I don't even know who the governor is right now. I knew it was Perry in the past, but I have no idea who it is now. Anybody know?
Greg Abbott.
Who is it?
Greg Abbott.
Greg Abbott. Yeah, see, I'm out of touch. I guess just as a pastor, I'm not, I don't feel like I have the time. I don't read newspapers. I look at Drudge once in a while and maybe get the top story, sometimes the top several. But that's not even daily a lot of times. And so I'm just, I know personally, I am not as faithful there as I need to be. And because I'm not, I'm certainly not leading the church as an example there when we have our prayer meetings. Look, I think the things we pray for are extremely important, and I think that they're probably priority importance. But that doesn't mean that we can just simply look at Scripture where it talks about prayers. By the way, does anybody know where it says we should pray for our governing authorities?
I wasn't asking where that is.
It's in 1 Timothy chapter 2. Why don't somebody open up and just begin reading in chapter 2, verse 1. Chapter 2, verse 1. Whoever finds it, just start reading.
First of all, then, I urge that supplications, prayers, intercessions, and thanksgiving be made for all people, for kings and all who are in high positions, that we may lead a peaceful and quiet life.
Now, if you just stop right there, it's telling us to pray for them, but you know it's interesting that the main purpose isn't so that abortion would stop. What's the main purpose? Exactly. That really is Paul's focus. I heard Don Johnson preach on this one time, and he said, you know, the main reason we're supposed to pray is that the government just leave us alone. But obviously in this day, you know, the murder of our children in this country is it's a big deal. If we're going to use our voice to try to help and to save, what's something else we can do?
Start a pregnancy center.
Start a pregnancy center. See, I think personally, here's what I recognize, that I can perhaps get a mother to not abort her child. That child grows up lost and dies and they perish. Mom grows old, doesn't abort her child, but doesn't get saved and dies and perishes. That's really the objective of the Great Commission. You see, these people were claiming the Great Commission. But I would say this, the main objective of the Great Commission is to make disciples. And I would, my heart as a pastor would be that in whatever manner we try to prevent women from killing their children, we're trying to point them to Christ. And see, that's the joy of all joys, the victory is had if a mother's converted and now because she's a Christian, she won't kill her child. And then to have that child grow up in a Christian home with a Christian mother, that would be, I mean, in my estimation, that needs to be our goal. We need to aim high. We need to aim for the foundations of the Great Commission. The Great Commission isn't simply to rescue children irregardless of whether disciples are made. You can't make the Great Commission say that. The Great Commission is about going into all the nations. And let's just, you know, let's just consider as well. Well, let's keep going maybe on that same note before we get off. Is there anything else we can do?
Adopt.
That's a big one. How does adoption help?
You give gives the mother another option.
Gives the mother another option. Because a lot of times, what's the options that the mother's faced with? Especially if the husband or the boyfriend has basically abandoned them, which happens a lot.
You may feel incapable of raising the child.
They feel incapable of raising the child, and what are the alternatives?
Just kill it.
Kill it, or put the child in the system, basically.
Still weighs on their conscience, even with that, about putting the child in the system.
But if you have Christian parents that come along, and the parent has a good feeling that the child's going to get a good home, it can be easier. What else can we do?
You could give out 180 videos from Living Waters.
180 videos. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you should check those out. Those are good. What if a church only gave itself to that and they neglected evangelism? Would that be right?
That'd be a greater crime.
What if a church only gave itself to that and didn't consider itself with sex trafficking in India?
It's like, where do you draw the line, though? Because there's so many issues. There's so many different things.
That's an issue there when it comes to justice and when it comes to love and when it comes to needs in the world. See, one of the realities that we need to face is children in the womb are not the only area of need in the world. It's one area, but it's not the only one. And that's where I would fault people that are in this abortion fight and they fault. Here's the thing. You know what? If you got a church that's doing nothing, then I think somebody has a right to say, wake up. But you know, if a church is involving itself to some degree in adoption, in crisis pregnancy, in prayer, in seeking to vote, perhaps sending folks to the clinics at times, handing out the 180 videos, seeking to help women who are needy, whose husbands have abandoned them or boyfriends have abandoned them, helping to give women other options. If a church is doing that, but they're also giving themselves to evangelism, they're also trying to give themselves, remember, it's not just the orphan, it's widows too. In other words, you're looking for people who don't have providers. You're looking for people who are needy in the world. If we're thinking about how to help mothers without husbands, how to school their children, how to provide for their families. If we're trying to help women who are coming off the streets or coming out of prison, if we're seeking to establish churches where people are in darkness, they've never even... John Zeitzman's finding people all the time that never even heard the name of Christ before. See, the person who is going to fault you because you don't spend your whole life in front of Planned Parenthood. But somebody could easily turn around and fault them for not spending their whole life where Christ has never been named. I mean, the truth is, most of those women that are walking into that abortion clinic have probably heard the name of Christ, and even more truth than that. Whereas there are places in the world, by the way, there are countries in the world, like in Nepal, where the abortion rate is far higher than in the United States. You know, another thing is, look, if you've ever looked into abortion, and you've looked at Margaret Sanger, and you've looked at where the abortion clinics are, and you look at the highest percentages of abortion, this is a racial issue as much as it is anything. And I mean, to specifically be putting churches in inner cities where you're trying to reach people at that level. See, there's a number of, I guess the thing is, we are thrown out into the midst of a very needy world. And if you have a certain church, not all churches are equal. For one thing, not all individuals have the same spiritual gifts. And then there's no church that has exactly the same makeup of the gifts in each of the individuals. And so you put them all together, and so no two churches look the same. And these churches are here in the midst of this darkness. And you know, the very fact that every church is different, very likely you're going to find that every church has a different emphasis. And I would say that as long as we're striving, prayerfully striving, to be trying to be a light in this darkness, and we're trying to reach out in all the different directions, you know, there's only so much we can do. We only are people, and we're only living right where we are, and we only have the gifts we have, and we have the time allotted to us. We have the spiritual gifts. We have the financial wherewithal. We're limited people, and in our weakness, we each have to figure out, okay, what is the Lord calling me to do? And you know what? Some people in the church, if you look at the gifts, well, some people's spiritual gifts are giving. Some people, mercy. Some people, you know, the truth is, some people have better speaking gifts. There are people who can go stand in front of an abortion clinic. They're very compassionate. They can speak. They can affect people's consciences. There are other people that are just caustic. It's not their gift. They may feel like they have to be down there, but they do more damage than they do good. That's just like street preachers. Some are good. Some street preachers see conversions. Some, they're lousy. All they do, people walk by and they tell them that they just, it's like they're seeing how they can provoke people. You ever seen those guys?
Yeah.
So, if we really care, if we really have love, if we certainly, I think based on all the texts that you all brought up to try to convince somebody, I would never be able to tell you, oh, those texts don't apply. I think they do apply. But I think we also have to be honest that they apply to other situations than just abortion. And there's a big needy world out here, and each one of us has to try to figure out where we fit in. It's like John over in Nepal. Some of the people he works with, they may be trying to plant a church. Some of the other people he works with, they're trying to rescue these girls from the sex traffic. Not everybody he works with is trying to rescue. See, I love it as a church when we've got people in our church who are involved in the abortion clinics, and they're going. I like that. And that we have people that have a heart for crisis pregnancy. I like that. And that we have people in the church that have a heart to be on the streets evangelizing and going door to door on our east side and evangelizing. And that we have those that are willing to be down in Saltillo starting a church there and reaching out to the poor Central Americans and everything. And that we have somebody like John who's willing to go try to rescue girls from the sex traffic and also try to plant a church there in Kathmandu. I like that diversity. I love it when we've got people using their gifts to do what God has burdened them to do. And I think the most healthy church is when everybody's not an eyeball. If the whole body was an eyeball, well, where's the nose? Where's the ear? Where's the foot? You see, when you have people that aren't condemning each other, because it can happen not just with abortion aspect, or abortion-oriented ministries. It can happen with regards to evangelism. You can get some people in the church, they're just not really comfortable. Oh, now, they may pray. They may give. They may have gifts in certain areas, but they're kind of traumatized by, you know, the idea of going standing down in front of the wherever and preaching on the street or even going door to door. The idea of it is just like, they're not comfortable. But that's okay. Not everybody's the same. Not everybody's wired the same. Ruby feels burdened, and she's making videos for women. She wants to help equip women. I'm not faulting her because she's not rescuing sex trafficked women over at the Nepali border. I mean, God has her where God has her. And I'm not faulting the Wilkinsons because they're not working with Trevor Johnson in New Guinea. And I'm not faulting them because they're not in Africa. Because the reality is we can all be in one place and we need to use our gifts as best as we're able. And it's not just a gift thing. There's also just different burdens. Two people may have the same gift, but one person has a real burden to use it over here. Like, I don't fault Carolina because she wants to pour into East Side Kids rather than go stand at the abortion clinic. Because, see, she's trying to impart the gospel to needy children. And that's a healthy church. But do we have a responsibility as God's people to be concerned about justice and to be watching out for the needy and to be watching out for the orphan and be watching out for those who don't have a protector? Absolutely, we should. We do have a responsibility. And so we need to be mindful of that. We need to be mindful of the things that we can be doing, we should be doing. But I'm encouraged when we have a church that's doing, when we have a church that's involved in all manner of things. I love to see grassroots movements in the church where people just feel like, you know, brother, I have a burden for this. I'd like to get involved. Women's Grace House came from that. I had a burden for that for a long time, but it wasn't until Alex Giuffre moved here and she said, I got a burden for that too. Okay, let's do that. And I've been very thankful for those that have been interested in trying to go to the abortion clinics and those who have had a burden for starting Crisis Pregnancy Center. I love to see that diversity, the gospel going out in all manner of different directions. Anybody else want to say anything more about that before we move on?
Brother, I think you, it's like you really hit it on the head when you start saying about, it's in the sense of, because I've seen the street preaching videos too when they go to the abortion clinic, and it seems like that's what drives them, that sin, abortion, whereas they're dealing with this particular sin instead of dealing with the sin itself, the person, their soul. And I think that's a big thing, because we got to deal with these people's souls. That's what's at stake. I mean, because if we're going to go to an abortion clinic and start preaching our heads off against abortion and we win the argument and yet we don't win the person over to Christ, it's like, I think of what Christ says. I mean, it doesn't go and play, but don't rejoice that the spirits submit to you, but rejoice that your name's written in heaven. And it's like we're rejoicing that the argument's won and then we can't rejoice because we didn't lead them to Christ. We're called to be the salt of the earth, and this is rottenness, of course. But
well, you know, the end of the matter is if people aren't converted, they perish. But I will say this, that if a woman is going up the stairs to abort her child, am I going to be able to preach the gospel sufficient to that girl right there in hopes that she's going to be converted by the time she puts her hand on that doorknob? If somebody's approach was, I want to appeal to this girl's conscience right now not to kill her child. If I can get her not to do that, and she'll come back out of that place not having killed the child, maybe she'll come over and talk more. Maybe there'll be an opportunity to get involved in her life more. I think if I only had 15 seconds with a girl going from the car to the door, I am probably going to try to appeal to her conscience right there not to kill her child, rather than to think I'm going to impart the gospel to her sufficiently right at that point. Now, the thing is, I think if we're having crisis pregnancy, you want to try to focus on the girl not killing her baby. You also want to impart the gospel. If you can get the people to, if you're actually doing the kind of ministry right there in front, you know, you have to ask yourself, is that really the best place to preach the gospel like Matt does in the square there in Saltillo? Is that really the best place to preach the gospel? If you're going to go there and you're going to try to appeal to the girls from the vehicle to the door, if you're really wanting to preach the gospel and preach a full message and try to get a hearing, that probably isn't the place to do that. Probably the only thing you're going to effectively be able to pull off right then in those few seconds is, see, I'm thinking to myself, this girl's already struggling with her conscience. She already knows this is wrong. And she may not even want to do it. This may be pressure from somebody else. Oh yeah, some are cold, just cold. There's cold-blooded killers, whether they're killing their baby or killing somebody else. But my thinking is that the majority of the girls, they're already struggling with a conscience. And if I can appeal to that conscience, that's probably what I'd try to do. If I only had 15 seconds, I probably wouldn't be saying, you know, God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten. I probably wouldn't be doing that. I'd probably be just saying, please don't kill your baby. You know it's a baby. You felt it move. I don't know what all the, you know, those that are really good at this, but I know some people probably that are involved in that really have an ability to appeal to young ladies and do it with tears and do it with passion in a way that it makes it tough for that girl. Some undoubtedly are more successful.
I had an occasion years back at an abortion clinic. I had already gone beyond the point where you're not supposed to go. But I was...
Papa, crossing the line.
I was walking with this young couple and advising him, you know, you don't want to kill the baby. There's another option. There's adoption. And you know what this young boy says? I'd never think of my son being raised by somebody else. Can you imagine what kind of mind?
No, I totally imagine that. It's like if I'm not going to raise him, I'm going to kill him.
Yeah, exactly.
That is such. That's a mindset. But brother, you had your hand up.
Yeah, kind of Proverbs 24:11. Here, this is a call for the church. It says, "Rescue those who are being taken away to death. Hold back those who are stumbling to the slaughter." If you say, "Behold, we did not know this," does not he who weighs the heart perceive it? Does not he who keeps over watch over your soul know it? And will he not repay man according to his work?
But I guess the thing about that text is I think if we're really wanting to do justice to it, it applies to all of mankind. All of mankind is headed to the slaughter. And the truth is, the church is the only entity upon the face of the earth that has the truth, because the Word of God has been committed to us. We are in the midst of a perishing world, and You know, I guess that's like the watchman on the wall. And we don't want people's blood on our hands. And the thing is, there's danger coming. And we're the watchers. And we know that the storm is coming. We know the enemy is coming. We know that the city is going to be besieged. We know there's danger. And we're the only ones. Nobody else upon the face of the earth is going to sound the warning call. The mouth of hell is swallowing people. And we know they're perishing. And that text, see, I think when people take that text and they automatically apply it to abortion, I think that that's probably way too narrow in the application. Is it one application? Yes, undoubtedly. But I think we need to be honest with it and faithful to it, and we need to apply it across the board. But the reality is, we live in the midst, literally in the midst of a world that is madly running to the pit. They are perishing. They are, I mean, we're in the midst of a world that is in the control of the evil one, and it is perishing. And the wrath of God abides upon it, and their time is short. And hell is moving. Death is coming. And if we don't sound the alarm, there's no one. Now, there may be other churches like us that have the truth, but God's people, Jesus said, you know, that Spirit was going to be given, and we're going to be His witnesses. Well, that first generation's gone. This is our generation. And in our generation, we're the lights of the world. We're the salt of the earth. And if we're not, there's no one else that is. The Spirit is a spirit of missions, a spirit of evangelism. The Spirit was given, and they immediately came down from the upper room, and they went out on the street, and they began to preach, and 3,000 were saved. Before that, Peter was not so bold. What that Spirit did was filled the people of God, and they didn't all just rush to the abortion clinic. They went on the streets, and they went everywhere. Now, if we read about the early Christians, did they take it upon themselves to try to rescue children? Absolutely, they did. In those days, there was abortion, but in those days, it was much more just the father gave the thumbs up or the thumbs down. They put the child out, and typically, you had people that harvested those babies, and they harvested them either as servants and slaves or for the brothels, and the Christians were in competition to see who could get those kids first. So they were doing basically the same thing, just because abortion wasn't so prevalent. They didn't have the medical practices that we have today, but the Christians were still there trying to rescue those children. So yes, historically they've done it, but that wasn't all they did. I mean, they were trying to reach everywhere.
I think one thing that comes to mind is where we're talking specific ministries or abortion, sex trafficking, but I think even taking it simpler to where we're being the salt and the light to people that we're surrounded every single day and making ourselves available. Because to your point, where the girl that's already walking up those stairs to the abortion clinic, while we don't know everybody's what they're going through in their trials, but if we just make ourselves readily available to our neighbors or the people that we interact with at work that we know are not believers and speaking the truth in that sense, there's so much more impact because they can see we're the salt and the light and they can feel the love from us.
It's the truth that sets people free. And that's what we are to do. We are to be the propagators of truth. The truth will set people free. The truth of God's Word. Anything else on that one before we move on?
It's interesting what you just said about Paul. Like, if children were being afflicted in his day, then those people who say it's sin to not be helping the afflicted children of our generation would have to say that he was in sin because he wasn't directly involved with that kind of ministry. He was doing something else.
And if you even think about Paul's ministry, isn't it interesting at the point when he says, there's no more work for me to do there, I need to move on. Oh, wait a second. If we go back there and look where he was, well, he planted churches in a few places, but certainly there were multitudes of people that were unreached. But you see, Paul, his calling was not to reach every single person, nor to help every single child that was in need. He saw his ministry as planting churches in the major metropolitan hubs. And then he expected those churches to then carry on the work in the local and regional areas. So he saw, go through the major cities, the major ports, the major highways, find these metropolitan hubs, preach the gospel there. You think about where he planted churches. He was strategic. And then he came to a place, even when every city did not have a church, he came to the place to say, there's no more room for me. I'm going to move on to virgin territories. Well, see, that was his calling. He didn't say, well, you know, you got a bunch of children there in Rome who are being thrown away. And so, you know, I got to go do that, or I'm not being faithful to my ministry. That wasn't his calling. His expectation would be, well, there's a church in Corinth. Those brethren need to now be doing what they need to do there, and their preachers need to be going out. They can be more regional in the church planting. But the idea is that the faith of these churches would be broadcast everywhere. People would be doing all manner of things and be seeking to walk in the footsteps of Christ. I mean, even Christ, you didn't see that in all of his teaching of his disciples that he was primarily telling them that they needed to rescue children. Now, he wasn't saying not to do it, but you know, when he sent out the 72, 2x2, what were they supposed to do? Well, not primarily rescue children. They were primarily to go out and heal and cast out demons. And they came back and they had cast out demons. And he said, don't rejoice in that. Rejoice that your names are written in heaven. And so different people have different callings. And you know, like, look, I'll tell you, there's a lot of things I desire to do, but I recognize this. I recognize that one of my primary callings is to pastor Grace Community Church. Now, and as open doors are given, I feel like being involved in other church plants and other places and trying to help. But I feel like that's my primary thing. I've had to come to realize I can't do everything. I can't be everywhere. All the things that I would like to see our church do, I can't lead in all those things. I can't be involved in all those. I just simply don't have the time. And I think we're all like that. We're all somewhat limited. We can't do everything. So what we need to figure out is, what is it that we should be doing?
I think that's like in Acts 6 where the apostles were, they laid hands on 7 so that they can go on and continue doing the work that they started off doing.
Yeah, because we're supposed to visit widows and orphans in their affliction. Well, here we're widows. And they're saying, it's not right that we serve tables. That's important. You know what that means? That means whether it's serving widows or serving orphans, for some people, it's not right to do it. Why? Not because it's wrong in and of itself to do it. It's wrong for that individual to do it because his calling is something else. What were their calling? Their calling was primarily to be given to the word and to prayer. And some people's calling is that. It's not to stand out in front of an abortion clinic all day long. It's to be in the word, it's to be in prayer, and it's to pastor God's flock. And that's just a reality. And if you look at those words in Acts chapter 6, they specifically say, when it comes to ministering to the widows, they said, it is not right that we should do it. Is it something that needs to be done? Yes. Is it something that the church ought to give itself some attention to? Absolutely. But does it mean that everybody in the church needs to be doing it? No. Some people, yes, but not all people. Maybe not even most people, but some. And I think that's the way it is with all the needs that we're faced with. I rejoice when we have some people given to all manner of needs in our society and in our church. I think that makes for a very healthy church.
But I thank God that we're blessed and that our church, we do have different ministries, people being called to the jail, to the prison, to Mexico and all places, you know. Different people have different gifts and different callings, and as we grow in numbers, we continue to spread out, and now more need for elders, and that's a blessing.
And I really hope in the future that I hope what we're experiencing right now is just the initial trying to get our feet wet experience with the crisis pregnancy. I really hope. I mean, I see on the horizon potential, which makes me, I mean, I have an expectation. I really want that ministry to succeed and become a real tool for reaching the East Side and reaching young ladies. And I'm hopeful. I know it's getting kind of a slow start, but I am hopeful that maybe in the course of time that we really see some things happen. Anything else on this?
How would you address these people who are protesting church members and almost placing this burden upon Christians and almost having like a puffed up view of this is, you know, looking down at others who aren't in the ministry, doing the same ministry and being divisive? Or
I mean, if you want to be sarcastic with them, you could fault them for not being involved in the sex trafficking in India. If you wanted to be sarcastic, but the reality is there's reality to that. I mean, I think the thing to do is just to emphasize to them that what they're doing is they're ignoring many of the things that God very clearly indicates that we need to give ourselves to. And I think that narrow view in faulting other people is they're basically doing what God has not done. I mean, they're faulting people who God may not at all be finding fault with. I think there's a place to find fault if we have people who are professing to be Christians and are not mindful to be meeting immediate needs, people who are not mindful of justice, people who are not mindful of the widow and the orphan and their affliction. I think if we've got people who just basically sit camp in front of their TV all the time and play weekend Christianity and they go to church and sing the songs and they're just basically living normal life and they don't really do much, and maybe at Christmas time they kick some clothes off the back end outside the Salvation Army or something. I mean, maybe there's a place to say to people like that, to seek to say, something's wrong with your Christianity. But if you've got people that are very narrow and they're condemning others, I mean, you do kind of have to remember the flavor of Romans 14, that we stand or fall before our own master. And, you know, you're thinking, you know, what are the issues in Romans 14? Well, you observe a day, you don't observe a day. Well, it's kind of like being involved in a ministry and not being involved in a ministry. Okay, you're involved in a ministry to the abortion clinic. I'm involved in a ministry to Saltillo. Or I'm involved in a ministry overseeing God's flock. Or I'm involved in a ministry that's involved with sex trafficking over at the border of India and Nepal. You see, the thing is, you're called to a ministry. I'm called to a ministry. Who are you to stand as a judge and judge me? I mean, that's what Romans 14 is saying. Don't judge me because don't judge the church because the church isn't one huge eyeball or one huge foot. The healthy church is described in 1 Corinthians 12 has eyes and arms and ears and feet, and it's got all these different pieces and parts. And so why are you fighting? Don't fight your allies. Don't spend all your time I mean, use your energy wisely. I don't think it's a wise use of energy to just spend all your time condemning professing Christians. Rather, go out and do what you feel like God has called you to, and let others do what they feel like God has called them to. And, you know, is there a place to try to encourage people? There is a place in Scripture to try to stir up people to love and good works. But the thing is, if the way to stir up people to love and good works is not to condemn them, that's not the best way to encourage people, to bang them over the head and tell them that they're in sin because they're not specifically devoted to the ministry that you think that they ought to be devoted to. But, you know, I would just tell people that, you know, go do what you think God has called you to and leave God's people alone, other than trying to stir them up. You could invite them to go with you, but if people are feeling like, you know, that's, I don't feel so comfortable with that ministry, I don't really feel like that's my calling, I don't think you can be a person's conscience in that area. You can't be the Lord and judge people. They'll stand or fall. But I mean, I ask myself, is our church doing enough when it comes to abortion? I feel that. I mean, I feel that this is a huge issue. Our country is covered in the blood of its children. How many millions, tens of millions since Roe v. Wade, their blood screams the guilt of this country. And so I do ask myself, about all sorts of things. Lord, are we giving enough attention to Ecuador? Are we giving enough attention to Nicaragua? Are we giving enough attention to Ireland? Are we giving enough attention to the flock here? What about our people falling through the cracks? Are we giving enough attention in this area or that area? I mean, I feel that pull in all these different directions, but sometimes it's abortion. It's just, okay, are we doing enough? What more could we be doing? I mean, I think that. I mean, sometimes I feel the pan. I feel the anxiety of being in the midst of a world that is just, we're surrounded by needs. We're surrounded by darkness. We're surrounded by people that are perishing. It's like, are we faithfully trying to reach everybody in our city? Are we faithfully trying to, this is one of the things you're talking, I mean, Leanne was talking earlier about, you know, hoping to get to that point in their life where they can maybe do more traveling. But I said the problem with traveling is that every place you go, you come away just recognizing all the needs. I mean, you come away from Poland and it's like, oh, they need to do this and this and they need to, I mean, there's so many, it's a dark country. You never saw a Catholic country like Poland, not even in Ireland. Not in Mexico. This Poland has got to be, you know, Pope John Paul II, and of course, Krakow is where he's from, and we went there, and you talk about, you never saw a more Catholic country. They are perishing. That country is dying. 99.9% probably are perishing in their Catholicism. So, I mean, yes, we have children being aborted, but you have Catholics that are perishing. And you go to Ireland, the needs. I mean, yeah, I feel like I left part of myself in Ireland. I go to Ecuador. Wow, the needs. Go to Nicaragua. They terrible needs. I'm going to be up in a few weeks in Portland, and you look around, and it's New England, and it's like, this is dead. Mona text, who's going to go to Europe? Europe is becoming Islamic, and it's, I mean, all the churches are closing and mosques are coming up in the place, and atheism is gripping all the people of European descent, and who's going to go? It's becoming the United Arab States over there. And then you got the Middle East. Him is saying, come over and help, come over and help, come over and help. And nobody comes. And he feels like, you know, who's coming? Why aren't people coming? I've been saying for how many years that we need help. And see, throw Dan in a room with the people, with these rabid people about abortion. Who's going to win the fight? Right. Come to Lebanon! Come to the abortion clinic! I mean, duke it out. Who's right? Well, the needs are everywhere, and people are perishing, and there's darkness, and Islam is dark, and we're in the darkness. But you know, the glory is, many of us in this room have been rescued, and we've been given the truth, and we've been given the light. And last thing we want to do is sit on our rear ends when we've got the remedy. And so wherever we're going, we need to be going. Whatever our calling is, we need to make sure we're living up to that calling. And you know what? Some people may largely stay at home on their knees. We need people like that too. Nobody should come to their door and fault them that they're not here, there, and otherwhere. I remember years ago, Charles Leiter told me about Leonard Ravenhill, and he told me, you know, some days he'd pray 8-10 hours or something, and what are you going to do, show up at his door and fault him for not being at the abortion clinic or for being in Lebanon, for that matter? No, I wouldn't fault him. We need prayer warriors, and some are called to that. What about the guy that feels like his gift is to give, and he feels like he needs to primarily give himself to working because he knows that the whole Christian machine needs financing, which it does. And so he feels like his gift is to give. You're going to fault him because he's at his job rather than being in Lebanon or in front of the abortion clinic? Well, I don't think you can fault him.
Do you think what Jesus talks about in Matthew 18 kind of applies to this, where they're telling him that this guy is over here casting out demons and in your name, and he's like, and they're saying he shouldn't be doing that shit, we're going to stop him, and he tells them, he's better off if you have a millstone placed around your neck if you go and stop him from going doing, because I mean, essentially I see that this guy is exercising the gift that God gave him, and they're attempting to stop him.
Jesus said, look, if they're with us, they're not against us. And his calling, I mean, what was he doing? He wasn't over there rescuing kids. He was over there casting out demons. And so Jesus didn't say, oh, what are you doing? You're not rescuing children. Actually, is there a place? You see, that's another thing. I mean, again, traveling around Europe one time, I mean, Charles was talking about, he saw a lot of demonic deliveries through Conrad Murrell in the days when Conrad's ministry was flourishing. And you know, he told me one time, you know, as pastors, he said, if you can deliver somebody in the church from demons, he said, you know what I told him? He was talking about our responsibility as pastors to do that. And I said something, and I don't know how serious I was in saying it. I think I was serious. But I said, but brother, I don't ever want to be like one of the sons of Sceva. And he rebuked me soundly. He said, brother, you are not a son of Sceva. But you know who the sons of Sceva were? They were the seven sons of one Jewish priest named Sceva, and they were lost. You remember what the demon said? Jesus I know, Paul I acknowledge, but who are you? In other words, Charles was rebuking me because I'm not like one of those lost guys. I'm in the camp of Paul and Christ. And he was just saying, look, if you've got the ability to deliver people from demonic harassment, and you don't do that, that's not loving. And I thought, well, that's true. And some people's calling is more that. And we have to acknowledge that gifts given in the church are like that. Ruby and I thought about adopting various times, and it seemed really evident that every time we tried, the Lord shut the door. But then you get some families in the church, the Butterbaughs and the Medinas, and, you know, God has very evidently opened the door. And I love it. I mean, I love that there's adoptions, and I love that there's people that do have a burden for the abortion aspect of things in our culture. I just want us all, I want us to be people of burden. I want us to be people who are seeking to be light, people who are aggressive in this darkness, to be light and salt. In whatever capacity you feel primarily called to, just recognizing we're not all called to the same thing. What else on that topic? Since we really don't have time to go to the next one. Anything more to be said there?
I guess, I don't know how much you can comment on it, because if you're aware or not, but there is like a group like Abolish Human Abortion who like has gone, not to like just the dead churches or the, like that are not doing anything, but like faithful churches who do preach the gospel, who are like doing evangelism and whatnot, and they've protested in front of like these churches, like faithful churches that and like they've gone there like calling them out, and you know everything you said, it almost like they're not really heeding, and even in like a condemning attitude, like I've heard like this group like say things like the church is responsible for these millions of like children that have been killed, and it's all like the church's fault, and like placing blame on the church. I guess do you see that as divisive behavior and you know like in a very condemning tone and not heeding, you know, what you're saying?
Just think about it. Ask yourself this question. Are they accomplishing what they seem to be wanting to accomplish? I mean, let me ask you this. If their real goal is to do what Hebrews 10 says, to stir up God's people to love and good works, are they really accomplishing that by that means?
No.
No. I mean, they're not. If a group like that came outside our church and began to do that on a Sunday during service, and they were trying to interrupt our service and be a huge distraction out there, I mean, I would just ask, do you really think when they get to the end of their life and they stand before the Lord that they're going to be able to give a good account for that? It's like it's kind of like the guy in the church that he doesn't like what a certain church is not doing. And so all he does is spend all his days complaining about it rather than saying, hey, I see a need in this church and I'm going to try to meet it. I see a place in the church where, yeah, they're doing a lot of things, but I see kind of a gap over here and I can fill that. And the person that joyfully goes in there, you know what? Other people start looking at that and they see the example and they see him cheerfully serving. And they may say, brother, what are you doing? I want to do that with you. Whereas if the guy's just scowling all the time and it's like he's condemning and you don't do what I do, you're subpar. You're less than me. It's like, go away. You know, you're not encouraging me to do anything but stay as far away from you as I can. I mean, just look, I'd like to see fruit in the things that I do. And so last thing there are times when I have thought, you know, well, if sometimes at the coaching of my wife, you know, if you approach them this way, this is not going to be good, which I admit I need such corrections and coaching at times because my wife has many more social skills than I have. But you do kind of get to a place, if you're wise, where you say, you know, when I do it that way, it doesn't work. So I'm going to quit doing it that way. It's kind of like this. I think some people feel like the church needs to be beat up and God has called them to be the hitman. And so they're going to go beat up God's people. And they feel justified, even though there's no fruit, they feel like they're in the right and they're going to keep doing this. But it's like, please, if this is really what you think the church should be doing, why are you not spending your time going and doing it yourself? I mean, think about all the time you're spending here doing this. While you're doing this, I should be picketing you because you're not doing the same thing that you're telling me I'm supposed to be doing. But it's like if there's a real need, go fill it and serve the Lord happily and get to the end and say, Lord, I believe you called me to do this and I tried to do it with all the grace you gave me. Because look, I can jump up and down and cheer and praise God if God were to give us women or even men who had the ability to speak powerfully to the consciences of those women from their car to the door. I mean, I would love that. The idea of people in our church where you have a mother and a child and it's like, this girl was converted because we went down there and here she is and here's her child. And I mean, that makes me want to shout for joy that would be the case. But for people to be radical, so radically convinced that the church ought to be involved in just this one thing, they're not even being faithful to Scripture. Because you can read the whole New Testament and there's no indication that is the single thing that God has called the church to do. It just simply doesn't exist. The church's ministry is to be, it's to fulfill the Great Commission. In all the different directions and angles that takes us in.